from Mexico to Jeanette, Pittsburgh to State College. This is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, a key indicator of a state's economic health is the number of small business startups. As with many such measures of state-by-state economies, Pennsylvania lags the national average in new business formation. David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Gordon Denlinger from the National Federation of Independent Business for a Capital Watch discussion. And heads up, green activists, the natural gas industry is leading the way in development of environment-friendly technology. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Pennsylvania may be hitting a saturation point when it comes to casinos. The Pennsylvania Gaming Control Board this past week received no bids during a casino license auction. The first five such auctions brought in $127 million in licensing fees to state coffers. But Wednesday's auction was the second time there were no bidders for the remaining license. Under state law, there will be no more such auctions. Pennsylvania now has become the number one state in the nation for tax revenue from casino gambling. Former Congressman Lou Barletta, who co-chaired Donald Trump's 2016 presidential campaign in Pennsylvania, has announced that he will not run for the 8th District congressional seat next year. Barletta did not run for his old congressional seat last year and instead mounted an unsuccessful campaign for the United States Senate seat held by Robert P. Casey, Jr. Instead of seeking a congressional comeback, Barletta said he would work to develop a political consulting firm and help other candidates win elective office. Barletta, however, did not close the door to future political opportunities. Former State Representative Rick Geist, who served as chairman of the powerful House Transportation Committee for many years, suffered a fatal heart attack last week while traveling in Russia. Geist was 74 years of age at the time of his death. He served in the General Assembly for 34 years. Opioid deaths, while still at epidemic levels, fell by 3% nationwide from 2017 to 2018, and total overdoses dropped by 5%. Progress in the fight was announced by Department of Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar. To continue the fight, the Trump administration announced an additional $1.8 billion has been allocated to help states combat opioid addiction. Pennsylvania's share of the new funding will total about $56 million, as well as an additional $8.5 million to track overdose-related data. Governor Tom Wolf reports progress is being made in Pennsylvania, where statewide overdose deaths fell by 18% between 2017 and 2018. A group led by former President Barack Obama has targeted Pennsylvania's redistricting process. Pennswoods is one of 10 states targeted by the group, which claims to want a fair redistricting process, but whose real goal is to slant new districts to benefit Democratic candidates. The new group has launched Redistricting U, designed to train volunteers to impact the redistricting process. After the 2020 census concludes, congressional and state legislative districts will be redrawn to reflect changes in population over the past 10 years. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Despite politically motivated naysayers, the fundamentals of the U.S. economy are strong, and this has reversed a downward trend in small business startups. But Pennsylvania has not participated in that economic revival as much as have other states. Here to take a look at why, we have David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association and Gordon Denlinger from the National Federation of Independent Business. They're here for a Capital Watch discussion. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. On this week's show, we're talking about one of my favorite subjects with one of my favorite people. We're talking about small business in Pennsylvania, and in the studio, I have my pal, Gordon Denlinger, Executive State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business in Pennsylvania. Gordon, thanks for being here.
David, great to be here. Always enjoy doing this with you.
Well, and I want to showcase you know, you and your organization, and more importantly, the work that you do and the people who you do it for. That small business in Pennsylvania, it's a paradox that our smaller employers are actually the sector of the economy that employs the most people.
Indeed. You know, two-thirds of jobs creation happens at the small business level. And it's about the mom and pop enterprises, you know, the corner drugstore, the hardware store, the gas station down the street privately owned, whatever it would be. You know, that's where so many of the real jobs happen. And that is what powers the economy still to this day.
And it's also where the big ideas of the future get started. They start small. They start with a sole proprietorship or a partnership, something in somebody's garage. And, you know, and again, that's the spark that down the line turns into, you know, a major employer or a an entity that really changes the way the economy works.
You know, the history of America and the economic system that we love is that folks have an idea, they get some capital together, call, you know, every relative under the sun or whatever source they can get to, scrape the capital together for formation, and then, you know, they take the risk. And they take the risk to get some reward at the end of the day, but along the way, amazingly good things happen. I will say sometimes challenging things happen for those who start businesses. Some don't make it. Some make it for a while and then don't continue. But ultimately, as we see businesses all across this land, and right now particularly a lot of success, there's energy behind the idea of job of business startups. And we need more Americans, frankly, to catch that energy and that perspective to go out, dream a dream, scrape together the capital, and start an enterprise.
Well, and you know, Gordon, you and I work, you know, work in Harrisburg, work, you know, in the under the Capitol Dome community. And for both, you know, PMA representing manufacturers and NFIB representing small and independent businesses, you know, we share a mission, which is competitiveness. We want it to be the smart business decision for people to choose to invest and hire and locate and expand here in Pennsylvania, as opposed to one of our competitor states. And so looking, you know, just at Pennsylvania, I've been alarmed that the rate of small business startups that you were describing in Pennsylvania, that rate for the creation of small businesses is dangerously low. Like, we are well behind the national average on that.
David, that is spot on. And, you know, concerning along with that are that millennials are not taking the risk and enjoying the fruits of starting an enterprise. And that's a generational issue. And I'm afraid that's because so many have become convinced that the hurdles are too great, that the regulatory burden, the taxes, the other things that government dumps down on people have become a bar to entry for young people who might dream the dream. And they back away from the idea. That's unfortunate.
Well, yeah. And also, of course, the personal circumstances of that rising generation, if they have, you know, gone through the, you know, higher ed, they're probably dragging the ball and chain of pretty significant debt load, which might make them reluctant to take further risks to start their own businesses. And I know that there are other, you know, economic and social pressures on that generation. But if it's bad for entrepreneurism among our young people, it's bad for society because we need their energy and their creativity to, you know, to help the whole world to be better.
Well, indeed. And, you know, you get back to your earlier comment about ideas. You know, Microsoft started in a garage. It was a couple guys, you know, sitting around dreaming a dream. And, you know, it wasn't some massive enterprise with millions of dollars. It was guys, you know, just duct taping some things together that happened to work. And here we are now with, you know, one of the major firms in the world. And you look at all of them, Amazon, you know, Microsoft, the other big ones that are out there. And then you go back to earlier times, you know, the major car enterprises and so forth. America is that kind of place. And I still believe it is. It's a place where people can dream a dream, come forward with a better product, a new idea, a vision, and then again, scrape that capital together and take the risk. PMA, Manufacturers Association, and we at NFIB are both very invested in trying to ease those doors of entry, ease the burdens so that folks can succeed and they do not get discouraged from starting or hindered from succeeding along the way.
So, Gordon, like, what specifically does Pennsylvania and Pennsylvania state government need to do to encourage more of that risk-taking for small business formation?
Well, you know, you look at the big issues, and this is not only for startups, but also for existing enterprises. Workforce supply right now is at critical levels. We're at technical full employment and even beyond. Right now, there are more jobs than people to fill them, and you know that's a crunch. That's an issue. So
certainly,
for folks who would start an enterprise, you know, can I find the right people to help me carry out this vision? Access to capital is not too bad right now. So you know, the private equity, venture capital space, and traditional banking, folks are finding pathways to capital. But as far as government and government solutions, you know, our tax code needs reform top to bottom. It really does. The C&I rate, which we talk about endlessly, you know, one of the highest in the nation, is really a stop sign for folks looking at Pennsylvania, 9.99%. When, you know, 6% would get us back into the ballgame, folks
right.
would take a look at Pennsylvania. The regulatory burden then beyond that. And I, in my role with NFIB and being the state director, I'm the guy who members call when they're having a hassle with an agency. And I get about a call per day, roughly. And just today, PennDOT, riding herd on folks in the trucking industry, just pulling them over endlessly and racking up fees and fines. You know, it's a gotcha game. And the problems related to, you know, that sector and really all of the executive department agencies have their rule books, their fine structures and their fees. And they just go after business owners mercilessly. It's really a big problem. So to answer your question, taxes, regulations, and got to find people,
yeah.
people, supply, workforce.
So I know that one of the many tax changes that's important for small business is the is something that's available pretty much everywhere else in the country, is that when a small business makes a purchase in other states, they'll say, well, we recognize that you're just exchanging two things that are similar, and therefore we're not going to hit you with the extra tax bite. In Pennsylvania, they don't recognize that, and so small businesses have the additional hurdle of the taxes that have to be paid when you're making a new investment.
Indeed, right on. And I guess the term of art is Section 1031, like-kind exchanges,
okay.
Which is the IRS code section. But yes, you're right. Pennsylvania is the only state in the union that does not allow this kind of exchange. So there again, Pennsylvania not in the game. But you know, to bring that in really would have a fairly small budgetary impact, just $1.3 million in cost to the state. So it wouldn't cost that much to allow it.
Reduce collections, yeah.
Reduce tax revenue, yes. And, you know, it really would open the door for small business to expand and take an enterprise to the next level.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me in the studio, Gordon Denlinger from NFIB Pennsylvania. And it's like, you know, Gordon, we talk about that, and it just seems like that's so, like, painfully obvious that if Pennsylvania is such an extreme outlier, and you put an obstacle like that in the way of a new business or a smaller business, you know, making that next step. I mean, we call it capital formation, but it's like getting your stuff together. You know, it's like building something and making it last. That's what capital formation is. And so it just seems like a ridiculously, just like an absurdly bad kind of problem to have. And like, why should it be so difficult to fix something like that? Well, and there's one of the other things that I know that you guys are working on, that in for other business taxpayers, there is something called the net operating loss carryforward. And all that means is, and this is under the IRS code and all state business taxes, that for a company, that you're allowed to take your losses in the recent past and apply them to your current and near future tax liability. So all this means is that for businesses that don't earn a profit in nice, tidy 12-month bites, that, you know, that you're able to roll those things, to carry them forward, so that the tax the tax claim isn't as painful when you get to be profitable again. And so and there are things that Pennsylvania does that need to be improved. But still, at least for most businesses that we can do that, for the S corporations, for the small businesses, they're not allowed to carry forward losses.
And this is an unfair point. You know, the majors, the C corps, they can do this kind of thing. But you're right. The pass-through entities, which typically your small businesses would be, they do not have an NOL or net operating loss statute in place. And, you know, it's what helps business recover from a downturn. You know, you go through some loss periods and then, you know, as opposed to the tax man coming to grab, you know, right off of the top, they let you recover a little bit. You take that NOL offset. And another place where it's key, you know, when you start a business,
yes,
you incur losses. You have a J curve where you go into your loss and then you start to pull out of it. You know, having the benefit tax-wise of those initial startup losses to offset against some initial gains at the beginning can really mean the difference between success or failure.
And gosh, I mean, Gordon, that goes straight to the heart of that issue that I mentioned at the outset, that Pennsylvania's rate, their startup rate, is very, very low. Well, maybe because we're the only state in America that does this, that might speak to that.
Well, and here's a stunner for you. New Jersey, of all places, Jersey has a better idea than Pennsylvania. And here it is. Take those NOLs and allow startup enterprises to sell them as credits to earn 50 cents on the dollar or whatever it would be, because getting capital when you're trying to start a business is so tough. If you could take your losses and sell them again for some percentage on the dollar to another enterprise that is profitable, you have a source of capital. New Jersey's doing it.
That's a great idea.
They put that on the books.
That's a great idea.
And Pennsylvania needs to do that. They needed to do it yesterday.
As we said before, small business is the largest employer of Pennsylvanians, and that it's also the sector of the economy where the most new employment is generated.
Absolutely. You know, it's where the jobs are sourced, and it's where the real growth happens. So, you know, we need to see that strengthened through policy changes that need to be put in place. And I will add, you know, we do at NFIB an economic trends index every month. It's
okay.
Called the Optimism Index. And, you know, this cycle's running pretty long at this point, but still in all, optimism is running amazingly high. It continues to, as the report would say, defy expectations in terms of growth. So a lot of consumer spending still happening, very strong in this economy, and small business owners are looking to hire more people, continue to purchase inventories, make capital investments in their facilities, and grow their enterprises. And so optimism is strong within the small business community.
And it's really interesting to hear that, because, of course, that cuts against the narrative that in the national corporate media about, we're headed for a slowdown and the economy is contracting and there's going to be a recession and the sky is falling and all this stuff. So you're saying that the actual responses from small business owners across America is that they are still pretty bullish.
They are very bullish, and you know, we're again well into this cycle. But I think there are people at the national level and in the media who are invested in talking us into harder times. And too often, you know, the sounding board is about agenda, quite
mm-hmm,
frankly.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think objectively, look at the data, and the data is pretty doggone strong at this point.
That's exciting stuff. So, Gordon, tell me why you love your job.
Well, you know, I'm a capitalist at heart. I have started a business in the past. So I've captured that magic within my own lifetime, and I love to be in fighting for business owners, the small business folks in the capital here in Pennsylvania. Just if I can go and carry their banner, fight their fight when they're at home doing the good thing they do in the community, then I can be in the capital and doing the good things that we need to do for them. And you know, I drive home every day feeling very good about defending our economic system and trying to make it better.
And you're also a recovering politician. So what's it like? What's it like to be on the other side of that dynamic? That you're one of the petitioners.
I think the definition for that is just schizophrenia. I'm not sure. There's like two of me all in one person. But yeah, and there's good people in the public sphere as well. Many folks who love the business world. But my heart is with business ultimately, and but I guess you'd say I have enough cynicism from years of being connected to government to look at it with realism, but also to talk turkey with people who are under the dome.
You know? I was especially struck, Gordon, when we were together not long ago at the Pennsylvania Press Club lunch, and that the speaker was U.S. Representative Dwight Evans of Philadelphia, former state legislator, now a member of the U.S. House, and that that among his duties that he has a responsibility for small business, and that anyway, as he was there, you know, addressing the crowd, that multiple times that he spoke directly to you.
Well, you know, Dwight and I, we exist in different zones politically. But, you know, on the small business issue, we can probably get together. And, you know, if two guys like Dwight Evans of Philadelphia and Gordon Denlinger can get together, there's hope for all of
us.
Well,
and that's just exactly the point that I was trying to get to, which is that, you know, the well-being of our economy, the well-being of our society really depends on the continued success of our entrepreneurs. And this is hopefully one of the places where we can, where we can work together to find common ground. So anyway, as we, you know, come down to the end of the time that we have here, Gordon, I wanted to first of all to thank you for being here. Thank you for being such a great teammate. And where can the listeners go to learn more about you and the organization?
Sure. They can find us out on the World Wide Web at nfib.org/PA. And we love to invite folks to come and be a part of our mission, supporting and defending small business.
And you're very active on social media, on Facebook and Twitter, so folks can find you there. As ever, listeners, thank you for being with us for the program. You can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 for PMA Perspective. So from Gordon and me, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Environmentalists just got some great news. America's power plants will emit 2.3% less carbon dioxide this year compared to 2018. Even better, emissions will continue falling next year, according to a new report from the U.S. Energy Information Administration. This progress isn't the result of new environmental protections or alternative energy breakthroughs. The credit actually belongs to natural gas firms. These companies have harvested such massive quantities of the cheap, relatively clean-burning fuel that power plants have transitioned away from other sources of fuel. The firms have also invested millions to make their drilling operations as environmentally friendly as possible. Green activists often demonize these companies. They ought to thank them instead. New drilling technologies such as fracking greatly boosted natural gas production starting in the mid-2000s. The Marcellus Shale play in Pennsylvania has greatly contributed to this boom in natural gas production, provided a much-needed economic boost to portions of Pennsylvania. Power plants soon began switching to this invisible fuel, which was cheaper than coal and also produces about 50% fewer carbon dioxide emissions. Thanks to this transition, U.S. carbon dioxide emissions fell 8% between 2010 and 2017. The natural gas firms have actively tried to cut emissions even further. Consider Ecosphere Technologies. The company developed a new technique that employs ozone to remove contaminants from fracking water. Via ultrasound technology, Ecosphere creates tiny bubbles that kill contaminants and help disinfect water when they pop. Then the company runs an electrical current through the fluid to break down the salts. The process helps fracking operations reuse massive quantities of water, which reduces pressure on aquifers. It also reduces the need for using chemicals such as descaling agents and biocides. These new techniques have already benefited the environment. Here in Penn's Woods, for example, the amount of water reused in fracking operations ballooned from 2.6 million barrels a year in 2010 to over 22 million in 2015. The industry is also spearheading efforts to reduce emissions of methane, which is a greenhouse gas. For instance, dozens of firms have joined together to inspect their pneumatic controllers. Pneumatic controllers regulate the level, flow, and pressure of natural gas. Now, these controllers sometimes release small amounts of methane into the atmosphere during their normal drilling operations. Recent advancements have enabled firms to reduce and even eliminate these leaks. So far, firms have replaced or retrofitted about 30,000 old high-bleed controllers. The Environmental Partnership, an alliance of U.S. energy firms committed to a greener industry, led these replacements. The industry has also made headway with new leak detection technologies, such as optical gas imaging cameras. These devices scan large areas of natural gas infrastructure and detect the infrared signature of compounds like methane, catching leaks otherwise invisible to the human eye. Such tools and precautions have yielded impressive results. In Texas' Eagle Ford Basin alone, methane pollution dropped 65% between 2011 and 2017. This occurred even as production soared 130%. Meanwhile, in the Appalachia Basin, methane emissions from natural gas operations fell 70% in that same period, while production nearly quadrupled. Though often portrayed as reckless polluters, energy firms are actually using their technical know-how to do right by the environment. And judging by the latest emission numbers, their efforts are paying off. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WIOV-FM in Ephrata, WPDC-FM in Elizabethtown, along with WERG-FM at Gannon University in Erie, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.